You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. We continue here on a Thursday. Joining me from the East Coast of the United States is Philip Smith, Philip E. Smith, as his parents named him. So, Phil, what's up? Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Good to hear you. Well, everything's going well here.
Really. This hour of All Marine Radio brought to you by our friends at the Marine Corps Mustang Association, which is comprised of Marine Corps officers and officers of other military services who share a common background. Phil's a Mustang. They're a group of men and women who initially enlisted and served with distinction in the Marine Corps and the Marine Corps Reserve enlisted ranks. The term Mustang refers to a commissioned or warrant officer who has risen from the enlisted ranks and owes its origin to the wild horse of the American plains, which is a distortion of the Spanish term Mustango. The association was founded by Captain Robert Richter, United States Marine Corps retired in Philadelphia on 10 November 1985 as a nonprofit veteran service organization. In their 33rd year of existence, the association continues to dedicate itself to the advocacy of professional development and the encouragement of younger Marines, demonstrating a pathway for advancement and offering mentoring, advice, camaraderie, not simply over the course of their military career, but throughout their civilian career as well. The Marine Corps Mustang Association is looking for a few good Mustangs to join them. That means you, Smitty. Contact them via their website, MarineCorpsMustang.org. I say again, MarineCorpsMustang.org. Look them up on Facebook and go ahead and like them. But they need your help to continue the work they're doing. So give them a look. They're good guys and looking to expand. They're not afraid to get involved in social media. So, anyway, just a little thought for all you senior Marine officers out there. Don't be afraid of it. Every one of your Marines is on it. You might want to check it out. I don't do social media. Okay, that's not a badge of honor anymore there, Bozo. That means you're completely out of touch with the people you lead. Maybe not out of touch, but no. Yes, out of touch, I would say that. I would dare say were I the commandant, I would tell every general officer either get on social media or get out of the Marine Corps, okay? The last thing we need is more dinosaurs in the organization. So, with that said, Phil Smith joins me this morning. Phil, let's talk about you. 30-second biography. Born and raised?
Lawrence, Kansas.
Lawrence, Kansas. Joined the
Marine Corps. Transplanted to Houston, Texas, my middle year of high school in 71. Joined the Marine Corps in 180-day delay program out of Houston in 73, and then did boot camp in 74. Spent some time in Echo 27. Then transplanted to Hawaii for a couple of years, then in Second Force Reconnaissance Company for 2 years, and then I submitted for the MESAP package out of Second Force Reconnaissance Company with Wayne Rollins as the principal sponsor. College at Texas A&M, and then as the
cool.
First.
Without the boots. Without the boots.
Yeah, without the boots.
Without the boots. That's a big distinction. It's probably the best decision you ever made in your life because there's a lot of baggage with those boots.
Yeah, well, none of the MESAPers that go through Texas A&M, while they're kind of quasi-members of the NROTC, well, they are members of the NROTC program, but they're involved with the Corps of Cadets, but they have to wear a uniform occasionally, the Marine uniform. And they're not direct members of the Corps of Cadets, so they're not required to get boots or any of that thing. We just have to drink out of them every now and then.
That's disgusting. do you drink out of them after they've been worn?
Oh, absolutely. There's no fun in doing it while they're new.
good God. What fools won't do to belong to an organization. I want to talk a little bit about transitioning today. Wait, we have to finish your little bio. So then you get commissioned.
I went to 2nd Battalion, 8th Marines, did the Grenada thing, Beirut thing, 82 and 83. Stayed in 2-8 another year after that as weapons company, or weapons platoon, and then Golf Company XO. Then I came from there to TBS. I think that's where I met you after I'd been at enlisted instructor platoon for a while. Moved up to the instructor group. Met Major.
What's his name?
Yeah, I just forgot his name, but he wanted me to become an SPC. Did that for two companies, then went over to IOC, for 2 years with Major Kelly.
You know, you had, you did just about everything at that school. You know what I mean? I mean, started EI company and SPC. Most guys didn't have that broad of a tour.
Well, I got there pretty junior. I was still a first lieutenant when I got there. And as a matter of fact, I was still a first lieutenant when I became an SPC. Didn't get promoted to captain until about halfway through that first company.
Motivator.
That was a lot of fun.
And Chris,
so by the time I left there, I was the senior captain. Yeah.
And Chris Woodbridge was one of your guys. Tell us about Woodbridge as a lieutenant.
Most of them, if I saw them again, I'd say you're all a bunch of shitbirds. But that's too general. I don't remember.
I told him that yesterday. I said Smith said you were a shitbird. He said, "Well, if I was, it was his fault. He was my SPC."
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of guys that don't necessarily do well at TDS academically or in the standings, but that's not necessarily the demonstration of a good character and so on and so forth. That usually comes with a little bit of growing up in the Marine Corps. But my role there was to, you know, rack and stack the guys based on leadership and academic and physical fitness. And then at that particular time, we were short infantry officers, so that was a lot of fun making it competitive.
Come on, devil. Everybody wants to be a motivator. So you do that as, and then let's talk about, so after the basic school, you're a captain, and then where do you go?
EWS for a year, and then company command and Bravo 17 and 29 Palms, and that was a lot of fun. I think there was 9 or 10 of us out of that EWS class that just volunteered to go to the 29 Palms. Just because they were having a hard time, you know, making people go at that particular point in time. That was, this would have been, '80s, some time frame. But
yeah, no, I followed you out there. I'll tell you, if you're a company commander, it's a great place because you can train out there.
Oh man, it was unbelievable. We created our own ranges. I never was quite able to accomplish one of the long-term objectives I had, what I wanted to do, and I told them this kind of upfront. I want to be able to take the company out in the mountains in the desert and just disappear. In other words, just hide, move at night, and all those other types of things. But I never quite around got to that at the company level. Students were pretty good at doing that.
Right.
Yeah, it was a great place. Even the family, well, my wife specifically, you know, kind of came to love it, although she cried her eyes out when we were driving up the highway.
Well, it's a bit of an optical shock, yes? if you've been from the Midwest or the East Coast and you've never seen the desert, when you come up, you know, you drive up out of the basin and you get to the high desert, especially where you can see the big basin when it opens up and you look and you're like, it's brown everywhere.
Yeah.
All right, so after you you finished company command, there weren't two.
Then I stayed there for another year, and I was the OPSO for the battalion under John Keenan. Then I come back to pick up Major, go to Texas A&M, back to Texas A&M as the MOI.
Oh, my God.
And then I go to Command Staff College. And then out to, let's see, 3-2. And then after 3rd Battalion, 2nd Marines, hit back to Quantico, the McCoy College, War College. And then from there, once again, I volunteered to go to Okinawa as a 3MF Kern Opso for a year. A year as a division G3, and then 2 years as 4th Marines CO. And that was when they didn't have the battalions. They were all the battalions were canceled the EDP program for a while, and all the battalions were rotating in and out of either OIF or the LEAF. So I had no infantry battalions, just had the headquarters company and all the ash and trash that goes with that. So we deployed for a year to Afghanistan as an advisor group headquarters.
That was
really the highlight of my career.
What province?
I was in the, there was actually 5, I think, we were in charge of. I was in the central part of Afghanistan, so we had 5 or 6 provinces that the Corps was responsible for, the 201st Corps at the time.
Right.
It was centered in Polocharki, so we had responsibility for south and east and a little bit north. So when I was all over the eastern half of that country for a good 9 months, I was there for a year, but the headquarters was only there for 9 months. But got to know a lot of Afghans, and was actually successful in bringing my interpreter back here with him and his family.
Wow.
And
let me ask you, was that hard work? I know there's been much consternation about with the Trump administration and enacting different regulations about the 7 countries on that list and who can come in. One of the groups that was identified as certainly should get an exception to that was the interpreters. Was it difficult to get your interpreter back here?
There is a process that we had to follow at the time, so it was not necessarily difficult. You just had to know what the process was, and then it did take time. It took me about 3 years to get through the process. And he had to make a personal trip from Kabul all the way to Islamabad, to the embassy there, to do his final interview and all that stuff. So it was quite dangerous for them to do that. All those guys, the Taliban knows about them, they target them pretty regularly.
As somebody who's advised in Afghanistan, and I'm curious your thoughts on Afghanistan.
I always have to start this conversation by saying I think, particularly with regards to the Marine Corps. Now I was an advisor from 2007 to 2008, and about a year after I got back, the Marine Corps started organizing to go back or to go to Helmand Province, and I had always thought that we did it just exactly the wrong way. Instead of going in big, like we ended up doing with the brigade and heavier, we should have gone in with what we're doing now, just like Task Force Southwest. Should have sent in 300 or 400 advisors. The Afghans love Marines. They have a two sucking drill when they know that the Army is going to be their advisor. So we had a good rapport built up across the entire Afghan Army, even though the only Marines at the time, 2007 and 2008, Marine advisors were with the 201st Corps. Our reputation, permeated the entire Afghan Army and some of the police units as well. But anyway, if we had gone in small with the Corps of Advisors, I don't think we'd be in the situation where we'd have to send them back now, trying to salvage whatever it is that we think the strategy is in Afghanistan. If we'd have gone in with advisors, built the 215th Corps from scratch, built it there at Kabul, the cadre anyway, taken it out to the Helmand Province, built the base, built the 215th Corps up with the advisors, it would have been much less painful for the Marine Corps with regards to casualties and connecting the tactics to the strategy by letting the Afghan Army and police carry the burden. And I actually told PPNO that. When I got back there, they asked me to come up and give them some ideas on how the Marine Corps would deploy, and they were leaning towards this partnership concept where, you know, battalions partner with Afghan battalions, so on and so forth. Well, the 215th Corps at the time didn't even exist, so there's nobody to partner with. So
right.
It was a moot point. You can't even ask the question if there's no Afghans to partner with. So the Marine Corps chose to go in huge and then build the 215th Corps once they got in there. Ended up doing a lot of the fighting, did good stuff, I think, in Helmand, but in the long run, it wasn't sustainable because we did it ass backwards. You start with the Afghans, you end with the Afghans. It usually doesn't work that well the other way around.
Well, we're going back there. We're going back.
Yeah, we're already there.
So do you have any confidence that we'll do it right this time?
No. I got some inside gals from the guys that were actually in that group and brought some information to their attention. The Marine Corps has yet to do and institutionalize lessons learned on either Iraq or Afghanistan. As a corps, there is none. There's been no conference. I did a couple of them while I was at the Small War Center, but the Marine Corps and its wisdom has disestablished the Small War Center, so there's really nobody there that gives a crap about the overall institutional lessons from advising and connecting the advising method to the overall strategy of what we're trying to do in Afghanistan. So I just don't think that the guys that left over there had any understanding about what it was that they had to do and were going to do, even though they got good guys advising them. Some of them had been there before. But the fact that they were asking the same questions that we were asking in 2009, and somebody else had to provide the answers tells me that the institution has some internal problems with lessons learned in war.
All right, I don't want to talk about that. That's depressing.
Yeah, I know.
No, it is. I mean, gee, boy. You know, we don't seem to be able to do it right. And we keep going places and we keep screwing it up. And I guess we all keep our fingers crossed that the current Secretary of Defense and the current National Security Advisor to the President can finally link what we do on the ground to some kind of greater strategy so that our strategic decisions to use force ultimately leads to the fruits of that, which would be a more stable situation in whatever country we decide that we'll go into, and therefore a better world. And it just doesn't seem like we're able to do to link all that together. And so it's not good. I want to talk a little bit about transition. Can you hold on? We've got to take a break. And transitioning as a retiree, which is different than other forms of transition. So we're going to take a quick break. Phil Smith joins us here on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio when we talk transitions. So we'll do that coming up next on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.
My name is Juan Perez, Jr. I joined the military in 98. I commissioned as an officer. But I always had in mind the idea that I would go into the special operations community, particularly the special forces. I was accepted to go into selection, and I attended on September 8th of 2001. As I was making my departure of the military, there was that uncertainty. What do I do next? How do I repurpose my skills in a way that's not only meaningful to me, but also that provides for my family and provides an increase in our a way of living, a quality of life. The Global South Foundation has resources when it comes to anything from building resumes to how to relate to a CEO in conversation, how to basically, again, repurpose that which I had learned in a career in special operations, dealing at the strategic and operational level, how do I take that and then turn it towards entrepreneurial spirit, into business development, and how do I translate that so somebody can see that value? And in doing so, I landed a magnificent and very rewarding career. I'm the VP of operations for an IT company called BuildSourced. What I say to veterans getting out, be bold. Be bold when you go to network. Go out to the Global South website, look at what events they have lined up, attend those events, you know, and participate. A lot of the events they hold, they're of key importance in this network. Go out there and engage, just like you would engage in a combat zone, you know, when you're networking there with folks that don't share necessarily your language, your culture, or your background, and yet we still make it happen. How can we not make it happen here?
The Global Soft Foundation is a great partner of All Marine Radio. Find out more about them at globalsoftfoundation.org/Marines.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in the crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good. And I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good. But are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
On Veterans Day, the nation honors the men and women who risk their lives to protect our freedom. Social Security does its absolute best to honor veterans and active duty members of the military every day by giving them the respect they deserve. For those who return home with injuries, Social Security is a resource they can turn to. If you know any wounded veterans, please let them know about Social Security's Wounded Warriors website. The Wounded Warriors website answers many commonly asked questions and shares other useful information about disability benefits, including how veterans can receive expedited processing of disability claims. Learn more by visiting www.socialsecurity.gov/woundedwarriors.
This is U.S. Navy and Marine Corps veteran Montel Williams. During my 22 years of military service, I had the honor of working beside many brave service women. They are the fastest growing population of veterans, and they can be a great asset to your company. Women veterans are trained to take initiative, adapt to change, and they're quick to learn. If you're an employer or a woman veteran, call the U.S. Department of Labor at 866-487-2365 or visit careeronestop.org.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. ...7:45 on a Thursday. Mike McNamara with you, and talking to Phil Smith, Colonel, United States Marine Corps, retired. Talk to me about how long did you seriously... plan getting out. Did you take a hard look at that? Or finally one day, did you just say, you know what, I think it's time for me to go, and then start planning it? How did you do it?
Well, I was up for general while I was deployed in Afghanistan. So when I got back and I got told I didn't get selected, I made the decision right there I was going to retire on my own terms. So about a year and a half. About a year and a half later, I went ahead and did it. I pulled the trigger about a year prior to it. It took about that much time to put everything in place. 6 months for all the medical, and that would be one thing that I would recommend. That once you make the decision, get started on the medical and have all of it done, the evaluations done before your retirement date. The VA works hard to work with active duty guys while they're in active duty, to get all their medical stuff done in preparation for retirement. Once you retire, you're in a larger pool, and it's going to take a lot longer for, you know, your claims and medical assistance to get through to you.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, if you take nothing else away from listening to All Marine Radio, you go to the front of the line as, you know, somebody that's on active duty as with that paperwork. And if you don't take advantage of that, you're stupid. Okay. So
yeah, it actually was work. And a lot of organizations, units, leaders may not, let Marines do that. In other words, you got to take the time during the workday because that, everybody works in the workday. So you're going to be basically ineffective, to the unit. And a lot of commanders, I think, have some axe to grind with that type of thing. But, bottom line, once you make the decision to go, it's work. It's the work that you have to do in order to make that transition and have the transition be easier, the best that it can be.
So financially, had you planned for it? Had you been kind of, did you know where you wanted to retire? Did you know what you wanted to do? Or were you developing the plan once you decided you were getting out?
Kind of developed a plan. For me, it ended up working out much better because I was in Quantico and there are much more resources both for preparation, planning, and workforce and those types of things in that particular area. Things kind of fell into place. As a colonel, I was the director of the Small War Center, and then when I retired, I was retired into the deputy position there. Although I, sent some resumes out and actually worked the resumes and actually interviewed at Valley Forge to take over that position there.
What position? What, park ranger?
Oh no, they've got a Marine colonel there that basically pretty much runs the Corps of Cadets and so on and so forth.
Valley Forge. Valley Forge. What?
The military school.
Oh, I didn't know there was one there.
Yep.
Does that make me a bad person?
No, not necessarily. But I was not going to commit to another 10 years of 24/7 type of military work. And my wife wasn't having any more of it. But it was would have been an interesting job, and I think very influential for cadets and shipmen or whoever, whatever they're called, when they go through that school.
So you stay in Quantico for how many years afterwards? So it's a pretty easy transition. You've had a home there. Did you still have the same home that you had when you were at the basic school?
Yep. Stafford, there in Stafford, Virginia. Yep.
Right.
I bought that house and
So that's a pretty easy first step in the transition. So you're doing that. When do you decide that you want to move? You live in where? North Carolina now?
South Carolina, yeah.
Damn it. You're living in, so when do you decide you're going to move to South Carolina and you have become, the Yankee woodsman now? I don't know what that guy's name is, but you become the
Yankee workshop guy.
Yeah, the Yankee workshop guy. So, how did you do that? How did you do that? Because,
once again, for me, it was, relatively simple because, my wife got to pick where we were going to retire at, and during this time, 2010, 2011, 2012, when all the grandkids were born. So, she decided we were going to go as close as she could get to the grandkids. So we just started driving around into, upstate, South Carolina. We liked the mountains and lakes, so we bought this place in 2012. It's kind of a preparatory move because I still was working there at the Small War Center and didn't quit there until 2015, but we had the house in 2012, so we owned two places for a while. Finally sold the place there in Stafford, and once again, that was still while I was working there at the Small War Center as the deputy, and then things just kind of fell into place. Told myself when I took the job I wasn't going to do much more than 5 years. You get a little bit of a pension out of working for the government that way, but that really wasn't the driving factor. It was, 5 years was enough, and we just moved lock, stock, and barrel here into South Carolina.
And the cost of living in South Carolina is such that you don't have to work?
Right now I don't. The wife is selling some skincare products, so that helps out a little bit with some beer money. But
so you're just living the good life, doing nothing.
Yeah, well, I'm working the wood. That's not doing nothing.
You're working the wood. Are you? It sounds like nothing. So, interesting. So, do you enjoy doing nothing?
I do right now, yeah.
Do you think someday you'll do something?
I do. My interest is, I may have mentioned it on one of your earlier shows when we were talking about education. But I finished a manuscript on, not mine, for a friend of mine who's recently on the state of affairs in American education. So we've got a manuscript ready for publishing. We're just trying to find some publishers now and getting a couple other folks to review it, just to make sure it's still usable and relevant to the current state of affairs. But and then I think as a result of perhaps getting that book published, there might be some work that comes as a result of that, either presenting the material, teaching, or consulting. Okay, so I haven't closed the door on it. In fact, I've got a little LLC thing already started, all waiting for work when I eventually want to do that.
So if you want to do that, if you want to become Thoreau, the key is to move someplace where the cost of living is such that you can be Thoreau, you can finance being Thoreau. Like, I can't be Thoreau on the West Coast.
Yeah, right? I know. Yep.
But you can be Thoreau in South Carolina.
Right. And I really have to give the credit to my wife. She was the one that really, since I was in the Marine Corps and the whole, I know she did the budget, she's done the finances, and so when we started thinking about moving, she started looking at what the retirement pay would be, what the cost of living here was, the mortgage on the house, paying off all the bills up to this particular point. In other words, I'm not paying on a car, I'm not paying on my truck. Paid off. I mean, everything's paid off except for the mortgage, so that helped out quite a bit. And she says, with just the mortgage and the day-to-day expenses, you can do it on your retirement pay. And I says, okay, well, that'll work for a short-term period of time, but at some point, I need to put some of this knowledge and experience I gained back to work. So we'll see what happens with that.
But a life with being the Yankee woodcutter and also consulting in education, that would be a good life.
Yeah, I think so. One of the things that the working with wood does, it makes you patient. In other words, you can't rush things. A lot of time for reflection and thinking about different types of things. So it's been good for me. The last year and a half has gone by so fast, I can't believe it. A lot of time to read some of these books that I've got on shelf that I haven't picked up, and so on and so forth. So it's been enjoyable.
All right. So if you were to give advice to other guys who are going to transition, becoming retirees, what is that? Have a wife who is a really good financial planner? Would that be your first piece of advice?
Well, it would be a question I would ask if you are serious about retirement. Is somebody has to do that for you? I think you either have to do it yourself or you have a family member that can help you with it. But doing that cost analysis was time consuming, and it has to be done. You can't do it on a whim. You got to sit down and put pen to paper and make sure that income and outcome algo matches. If it doesn't match, you won't be able to do it. You got to. I would recommend finding a state that's friendly to veterans. South Carolina is not necessarily one of those with regards to taxing retirement pay, but get a little bit back. But find a state that doesn't tax any retirement, and that'll help out quite a bit. And most of those states are already easy to live in with regards to cost of living, as opposed to Virginia or California or some other places.
Yeah, they don't need us. they don't need us in those states. So it is what it is. The what other, you have any other advice for? I think the two, financial planning and your medical stuff, do that really quick, are great pieces of advice. Any other advice relative to transitioning for retirees that you would give?
I was really struck by the effectiveness of networking across the board. I mean, a lot of Marines don't want to do it because they think it's a hit on their ego or whatever. But networking, just reaching out to folks, and I'm networked with several guys who've transitioned that knew that I was here, either thinking about coming to South Carolina or other places, that you know, just point them in the right direction, connect them to somebody else that knows about work and so on and so forth. So I would say networking is another way to make sure that you're placed in a position where you can work. Just do it. It's got to happen.
No, it's interesting. I've met guys who said, you know, every job I've got from LinkedIn, and every one of them was a referral from a friend. Hey, you might want to talk to this person. And the number of veterans that are on LinkedIn is incredible, and the things that they're doing around the country are also incredible. So if you begin to work that, you're not going to have to work it very long before you certainly bump into other veterans that either are looking for somebody like you, can point you towards at least an organization that's looking for somebody like you, or certainly make the search easier. Anything else?
Yeah, the third thing is Veterans Affairs. Make sure you become a member of the VA. I have found that a lot of the information about the inadequacy or the ineffectiveness of VA is not necessarily accurate. I think it does vary by state, but make sure that you have applied for your disability prior to your actual retirement date, and make the VA work for you. If you're having issues with the VA, there's a VA advocate that's supposed to help you, but sometimes those people are internal bureaucrats. Finding some assistance from somebody on the outside to, you know, push the right buttons for you, you know, maybe an effective method as well.
So the VA gets a bad rap, and it's not always their fault? Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, what I have found, and I've actually, since I got out, I've been helping several guys who have had difficult time with the VA. You got to do a little bit of work. You got to know where your records are. You got to have copies of your records. You got to have your DD-214. The VA will find all that stuff eventually for you, but it's going to take a good long while. And if you've ever been treated for anything medically while you're in the Marine Corps, you've got to have records. It's got to be documented. So take the time that it takes while you're on active duty to make sure that you've got all of your medical records. I do know that there are a number of folks that, you know, they would go to sick bay and they wouldn't get records because they didn't want it on their record type of thing. That's going to end up hurting you in the long run. Make sure everything that you've had done to your body on active duty is documented. Everything.
All right. Smitty, we're going to have you back in the next couple of weeks, and we're going to talk about PME, which is what I'd enjoy talking about. Retiring as a transitioning as a retiree is a little bit different. You have a little bit more breathing room as opposed to people that don't have that. And we talk transition on Thursday. Wanda, you seem to be enjoying yourself in retirement, and that's always a good thing. So first of all, thanks for coming on and being a guinea pig and sharing your advice. And we'll have you back and talk about professional military education.
Yeah, it's been my pleasure, Mac. Appreciate it.
All right, bye. Yeah, thanks for the visit. That is Philip Smith, a great American. And an awesome guy. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. We're going to out to Boulder Crest Retreat here, and joining us is going to be their executive director. His name is Dusty Baxley, and so we'll talk to him coming up next on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
MilitaryByOwner.com is an excellent resource for any military family moving to a new area. We found a ton of homes to choose from and purchased a house 8 days later. This was the only site I used. Thanks, Military by Owner.
Are you PCSing? Do you need to find a home near a military base quickly? With over 45,000 listings and 15 years of experience helping military families find, sell, or rent their home near a military base, MilitaryByOwner.com can help. Military by Owner. Proven and dependable.